Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So hopefully by the end of this hour, you will be less confused about what's going on in the market. At least that's our intent.
That would be a good thing, yes.
Yeah, well, that's what we hope to accomplish. Anyway, this is live call-in radio. Paul's sitting there at the desk waiting for the phone to ring. Since the station's been on autoplay for a couple of hours, we need to wake him up. And you want to talk to us about the market, your investment, your portfolio, or the best recommendation that the local financial advisor has given you for your portfolio, and you're just wondering a little bit about it, give us a call, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770, and we'll be glad to, Paul, put you on the board, let us know. Got to have a subject that is consistent with the show. It's got to be about investing in the markets. But give us a call, 800-465-8770. Well, if you take a look, Perry, at the NASDAQ tech, theoretically it's a tech index. It's no longer tech.
Right,
if you want to look
right.
at tech stocks, you have to go look at the ETF, XLK.
There you go.
Or go find a mutual fund that's actually in tech, because the NASDAQ tech index has morphed into whatever we can be that will make people happy. But anyway, when you take a look at it, it peaked in November. And if you have been concentrating in tech stocks like many did in the late 90s, because tech has been on a roll for a couple of years, and you're sitting there and you are, well, euphemistically licking your wounds and saying, oh, what on earth am I to do?
Right.
I mean, tech is the future of the global economy. We aren't going anywhere without technology. In fact, so much so, Deere, which makes lawnmowers and tractors, big equipment stuff, you know, they are introducing this year tractors with no drivers. They will plow your field using a GPS and technology. Did you know that John Deere was a tech company?
Yeah, really, really. They're actually really, really high tech, and they've been able to do that for a number of years now, actually. But they still had, you know, a regular driver's cockpit, as it were, on the tractor. Now they're like, well, we could just do away with that. That's just extra stuff we don't
need.
What
do we need the air conditioning unit for?
Nobody uses that steering wheel anymore, anyway. Yeah, so let's just don't put that in. So.
If you're in tech stock, you take a look at the last couple, 2.5 months, and you're saying, is this the beginning of the next bear market?
Yeah.
I would guess that most of the younger generation doesn't even know who Alfred E. Newman is.
No, that's true. That's true. That's an oldie but goodie. That's right.
But for baby boomers, they remember Mad Magazine, I'm pretty sure. And Alfred E. Newman is kind of like, to quote him, what, me worry about a bear market?
Yeah.
You know, why should I be worried? The market always goes up. I mean, everything I read says the market always goes up. Quit worrying about it. Well, you know, it does go up. But it does have some periods of disruption, and they can be very, very serious. So they should not be approached as a relationship of Alfred E. Newman. I mean, he should be stuck in the closet, and you need a process to deal with the bear market when the bear comes out of hibernation.
That's it. You know, you don't have to stay worried about it, but you do have to be prepared to be able to do something about it. And that's a problem with a lot of younger investors right now. They have not experienced a bear market, and they're not they're not really prepared to make a change in what they're doing or to protect their capital or not. They're not experienced at what that is. And, you know, it's going to come around again. It always does. It's just a matter of when.
So we go all the way back to pre-1900. Pick a year, 1897, for instance, because that's where the data is.
There you go.
We have 20% drawdowns one-third of the time.
How about that?
Now, we haven't seen one-third of the time since the 09 bottom.
Right.
But that just simply means statistically the odds are increasing. At some point in time, this is going to unfold as a bear market. And a 20% decline, you are supposed to close your eyes and go ho-hum. And then play Rumpelstiltskin and wake up and say, what do I do now? Huh? I'm down I'm on my million-dollar account. I'm out $200,000 in my 401k because I was caught sleeping.
Sometimes it's easy
retire.
To watch that percentage. Yeah, you put that in dollar terms, and it becomes, ooh, that's real money. Now what do I do? That's when the sweat starts to break out.
Well, but when you're using industry standard best practices, you don't do anything.
You do not. That's correct.
Unless it's a quarter end, and then you rebalance your account. You sell your winners and buy your losers, and put more money into them. And then the market goes to minus 30, not minus 20, minus 30%. You're down $300,000, and you are taking Tums just to go to sleep.
if you can go to sleep, right.
Yeah, but then you're a long-term investor. You're in here for the long haul, and you know markets go up. They always go up. And then you're down $400,000, and that's when you bail because I just can't take it anymore.
The pain gets too bad. You can't sustain that. People can't look around and say, well, let's see, it took me 40 years to put this money together for retirement, and now almost half of it's gone. I can't just sit here and watch the other half go too. I have to do something. And that's generally the range when people begin to just pull the plug, just walk away.
So if any of you happen to have listened to either our only pre-recorded programs in the history of our more than a decade of being on the air on various stations, we talked about the fact that we used to be in the group, the large, large group of financial advisors that use modern portfolio theory. And we explained why we no longer do, because a major bear market can wipe you out, basically, in your retirement plan, your college education, and then they go away. And for example, at the bottom of the market in 1932, people talk about the 29 crash, but who of us was investing in 1929
yeah,
to experience
correct.
It?
Correct.
So the bottom of the market in 32, it was back to 1903 levels. It wiped out three decades of market gains.
That's tough. That's a tough thing to say. Well, just hold on. Everything will be okay. The last 30 years just got erased from any and all investments you had in the market. That is tough. That is not reasonable to ask any individual investor to do that.
But the market always goes up.
Yeah,
don't worry about it. Go back to sleep.
If you have enough decades left, yeah, that's true.
In 1974, the bottom in 74, the Dow was back to its 1959 level. Mm. So we wiped out a decade and a half. In 2002, it wiped out 5 years. It was back to 1997. And at the bottom of 09, it was back to 1997 all over again.
Ooh. That's a terrible loop that's repeating there between 2002 and 2009. That really did wash a lot of people out of the market, and so many investors we talked to today have had a really tough time deciding to make a move back in. Even from 2009, it's still such an open wound that they can't get themselves to get back into the market.
So the pandemic bear that we had just a couple of years ago, 2020. That is relative to bear markets. That was a flash in the pan.
It was.
And the only reason after having wiped out 5 years worth of market gains in 6 weeks. The only reason we are where we are now is because we decided collectively through our representatives that we should go massively into debt at the government level, and the Fed should pretend that it actually had a money printing machine. And in fact, Mr. Powell was interviewed on TV not too long ago, right, and he said just that. We just print money out of thin air, end of quote. Ooh, so here we are with an inflation problem.
Now, because they printed not just some, they printed a lot, more than they've ever printed before. And once, once those dollar levels get into the trillions of dollars and multiple trillions of dollars, it really is hard to even understand how much money that is. It's a tremendous amount of cash that they put into the system.
So a bear market doesn't just wipe out gains. It almost assuredly will wipe out your confidence in a brighter future. Mm. And what you just referred to, Perry, is that at the bottom, when bargains recur, nobody has the guts, the emotional fortitude to say, let's jump in with both feet.
Right. Because... Well, think about what individual investors are asking themselves to do. They're asking themselves to say, well, my retirement was just destroyed. My portfolio is in tatters. Let's get back in the market real quick here. You know, it's like reasonable people cannot make that decision. It's just not something that they're going to do.
It does not happen.
No, they're going to stay out. It hurt too bad, and it's psychologically too damaging to say, yeah, I'd like to do that again. That was fun. Let's get back in line and get in there with the rest of those folks and do it again and see how it works out this time. It's just not going to happen.
We've pretty well used up a segment here. Let's go ahead and take our break a few seconds early.
We're right up against the break here. Time to get out here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have monthly market updates. We have a webinar once a month around the first Saturday of the month. Our next one is scheduled for Saturday, February 5th. You can register for that by going to IRIradio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. Just go to the webinar page. There's a registration link there. Give that a click. You're going to get an email back. And then on February 5th at 9 a.m., you just click that link and you will be live online with us, and you'll be able to see our screen, see the charts, see what we're talking about, see what's going on in the market out there. And we always have plenty of time for all of your questions. We get a lot of very good questions from our webinar participants, and you can get your questions answered there too about the market, the economy, or individual securities. You want a second opinion on something in your portfolio, we'd be glad to do that for you. Again, you can register for that at IRIRadio.com. And of course, if you'd like to call us here this afternoon, we would love to talk to you at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You got to know when to hold up.
Yeah, in that last promo that I just did, we mentioned the cost of groceries rising.
Yep.
And people recognize that. I mean, I've had people in the grocery store just kind of mumble comments to me about how much more expensive
virtually
everything.
You've got to be kidding me. Yeah.
Well, I bought eggs the other day, and they're $6 a dozen. I'm thinking, but I was in another grocery store that was $9 a dozen. I'm thinking, for a dozen eggs, I'm ready to go back. I'm not ready to go back to the farm. But when we had a farm and we were raising our own chickens, beef, geese, and we're doing all sorts of stuff. This was we had the return to the land.
There you go.
For a few years, and it turns out that's an awful lot of work.
But, right.
You know, on the grocery side, we picked up an article here this weekend that it was on Bloomberg, that your salad, which normally comes when you go to a restaurant, you order your main dish, and they say, and you know what kind of dressing you like on your salad, or would you prefer soup? It looks like salad may no longer be included in your main course because the cost of romaine lettuce is up 61% year over year.
That's something, isn't it? That's when that happens,
you're going to get iceberg instead of romaine if you get a salad.
They'll sell you a steak, but to get a salad, you need a credit check. So you
can... Here we go. Well, before we went to break, we were talking about risk management. And one thing that risk management is not is owning a bunch of bonds as an offset to the volatility of stocks. Mm-hmm. Bond volatility is going to increase rapidly with rising inflation and rising interest rates. The bond market has never been stable. The only reason it looks stable is because the only time people see prices is on their monthly statement. They don't see what bond traders do between the first and the last day of the month. They are very volatile. But with falling interest rates, bonds have been a good asset since 1979, at least since 1981 or two, when the bubble really broke under Paul Volcker and Fed and Reagan with the new tax law. But now this whole paradigm is changing. We now have a Fed who says, we are going to raise interest rates. We are going to raise them from zero to half a point, and that will kill, and that won't kill inflation. Maybe 1.5 will. How about 2? Okay, so for now, bond traders are saying interest rates on the 10-year treasury will go from 0 to 2 this year. Expect 4 interest rate hikes, and yet, with inflation at 7 and in the real world higher
than that, right?
Then maybe 4 rates aren't enough. And instead of having to push to 2, we'll see the Fed suddenly panic and we'll have to see 5 or 6 interest rates this year. And that would mean a couple more in 23. That will upset an awful lot of financial advisors, beautifully looking pie charts and plan for their clients' futures, which will be going in the tank.
Don't forget all those pie charts and that big bond allocation for, you know, quote, your portfolio stability. Those are all backwards looking. Those are all looking back to 1980 when things were doing well in the bond market. That has radically changed. It's no longer true, and it's not going to be true unless you think bond prices can continue to fall another 90% from near zero where they are now. And, you know, we never have anyone tell us that, yes, they think bond prices are going to continue to go down. Clearly, they're going to have to go up. Clearly, interest rates are going to have to go up, and that's going to substantially damage the bond market. And if you have the majority of your portfolio in bonds to protect your capital, it's going to do the opposite. It's going to hurt your portfolio, and it's going to cost you money, and it could be decades before that reverses. So don't follow that trail. It leads nowhere.
Well, and that is primarily the reason that we no longer do this. I mean, the issue that we were addressing in the last segment is that we don't know when there's going to be a bear market. All we are convinced of is that bear markets have not died.
Correct. They're still out there, yeah.
They're somewhere in the future. And when they show up, what are you going to do about it? Do you have an active decision-making tree that says, I can't own this anymore without jeopardizing my financial security? And if you're using a standard best practices balanced asset allocation portfolio, the odds are you do not have that discipline. Your discipline is the markets always go up. Go home, go to sleep, and quit calling me. Yeah, well, you know, our process is when it's not working, quit using it. And that's what happens in the bear market. Equities quit working, and you should quit using them. And in this case, bonds may also be not working, in which case you shouldn't be using them either. So what are your choices? Well, so far with inflation, gold, the standard choice for an inflationary environment,
largely, yep,
is not working. It's not working. You may just have to hold some cash for a while to let some of this work its way out. In in actively managed accounts, you may be able to do an inverse position and benefit from falling prices. I mean, that is a strategy which most portfolios do not use.
They don't. They people don't look for that. They don't think about that. And that's one of the things that we can use in some of our portfolios. And the most important thing, though, is to make sure, like you said, Don, that you're actively looking at what asset classes are in your portfolio and have the correlations between those asset classes change. Are stocks and bonds still doing the same thing they were in 1980 when during the bond bull market? And the answer is no. They're not. So the relationship to stocks and bonds in your portfolio shouldn't be the same now as they were then. But if you're in that pie chart, they are. You just hang on to them the same way anyway, pretending that they're going to revert to the mean at some point, to the historical mean of the last 30 years, and start returning again. But that means, you know, we need bonds returning, you know, 5% or so for that to work. And we're not even in the neighborhood.
So even if you are using a standard pie chart asset allocation model and you are getting older, you're automatically being pushed more and more into bonds as the risk in bonds continues to increase.
Right.
You want to talk to us? This is live call-in radio. It's 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. And we have time that we can still talk to you today all the way up to the top of the hour. Well, one of the things when you're looking at the market is well, looking over your shoulder and saying, can we learn anything from this? We talked about this last week when we're making trades, whether it's a good trade or a bad trade, you want to look at it and say, if it worked right, how did my rules apply to that? And what, and I want to be sure I do that correctly again. If it worked wrong and you took a loss, whether it's small or large, you want to look at the rules and say, did I miss something in the process of that? And it's often investors are taking a look at the extended valuations that we have today and saying, this looks a lot like the tech bubble. Mm-hmm. We should have a bear market and let's gather everything up and go hibernate for a while. And it's hard to justify that position today.
It is. There's no telling when, you know, like we said, there is a bear market out there and it will get here, but we really literally have no idea when that is. And just because things have been going up recently doesn't mean they have to stop now. They don't. It could continue going up, and you don't want to miss that because of a belief system that says, well, it's gone up too long. We're just going to get out because it's time to get out. No one knows when it's time to get out until after the fact. And so you need to track the data, look at what's going on, and don't base your decision on historical things that have happened, because while history sometimes looks the same, it never repeats itself. So it's not valuable in making a portfolio decision.
So we haven't had a lot of tulip mania repeated or thrown
right
up on the lately, but back in 98, that was one of the issues we're looking at. The Y2K ahead of us and the stock prices running up those rapidly. And then by June of 99, the Bernstein Fund family actually held an entire conference for financial advisors that was discussing the fact that, well, it's not a bubble if everybody believes it. From here, prices can go up. It's kind of like back in 29. I forget who said that the market had set a new standard,
right,
and it was never going to see another crash.
Never going to go down again. Just going to keep going up. It's like, give it a minute.
Right. Yeah. So back in the tech bubble, I mean, my goodness, you had Coca-Cola at 43 times earnings, Johnson & Johnson 41, Walmart at 46 times earnings. Well, those things got washed out pretty quickly. Well, 2.5 year bear market was not real quick. And we have a lot of expensive stocks today.
Right.
Many of which have already fallen 50% from their highs early last year. Really? The indexes is going up. You know, you take a look at the Dow and you take a look at the S&P and the NASDAQ, and I'm sitting here telling you that there's a slew of stocks that are down 50%.
There's a lot of volatility right under the surface, and those index returns mask a lot of it, and that makes it very difficult for if you're an investor to figure out, well, how come my returns don't match that? And so anything you do to mitigate risk, anything you do to diversify away from, you know, that S&P 500 index, if that's what you're trying to replicate, anything you do that's not exactly in the S&P, your returns are going to be less, because that's the only place you're going to get that number. And most of those S&P 500 stocks aren't doing that well anyway.
So one of the classic exchange traded funds for these high growth stocks is the ARK Innovation Fund. The ticker is ARKK. And I looked it up before before we started here today. And from its peak back in February, it is now down 49%. So it's
Ouch.
Not quite 50.
Yeah.
I mean, you
that's
can hang on.
To you and me. I got to tell you that right now, 49%. Hey.
And earlier in the year, we had Zoom, which is a relatively young company, worth substantially more than ExxonMobil, which has been around for more than 100 years and actually owns assets.
been a dominant force in energy, producing and delivering energy for decades. And all of a sudden, a little internet company's surpassed it in market cap. It's amazing what can happen in economy, in a market that's been turned on its head by a pandemic. We're right at the bottom of the hour here, Don. We got to go ahead and get out of here. We will come back and talk some more about bull and bear markets and what is and isn't possible and what you can learn by looking forwards and looking back. We'd like to also remind you that we have a weekly email newsletter that we can review. You can sign up for that by sending us an email. Send the email to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put week in review in the subject line, and we need your first and last name. We will get you set up, and you'll begin receiving that on Monday. It's a really good look at news that's out currently, and we try to let you know what's important and things you can probably just safely ignore. So it's a good look at current information and a good filter for what you need to be looking at. If you'd like to talk to us here this afternoon, feel free to give us a call at 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, if you don't watch Westerns, you don't recognize that. Anyway, that's from True Grit. In fact,
wait a minute. Are there people that don't watch Westerns? That's not right, is it? I don't know.
So if you listen to this show at any length of time, you know, I like Westerns. And my wife's not in watching Westerns. Every now and then she says, okay, it's been a long time since I've seen that one, so we can finish watching it. And we're watching one the other night, and she says, hey, look at that. Look at those guys. This is a Western movie. Look at those guys. COVID isn't new. Those guys are all wearing masks. Yeah. They had COVID, too.
There you go. That's just like the serious guys at the grocery store, yeah.
That's how serious she is about Westerns. Yeah, they had COVID, too, back in the 1800s. Anyway, we've been talking about risk management and stuff, and a lot of people over the years have just simply thrown up their hands and said, I'm just going to buy the index fund. Yep. And let the index firm worry about it. And if that's where you are, this has been a decade of good times,
yep,
both in terms of return, but more importantly, in terms of cost. And those good times, as far as the costs are concerned, are not going away, because the competition among major exchange traded fund and mutual fund sponsors is continuing to become more severe.
It is. We've called it before, the race to zero. Everybody's fees are just continuing to drop for the internal costs of the funds out there. Everyone wants to be the low cost provider, and they don't mind how low it goes, apparently.
It was several years ago that Schwab, where our clients have their accounts held for custody, Schwab announced in the ETF marketplace they were going to be the low-cost provider. For several years, I mean, they were until, I think it was about 2 years ago. Well, that would be COVID. So the year before that, probably 19, BlackRock announced that they were cutting their fees on a number of ETFs. Within 2 weeks, Schwab cut their fees. I mean, it was just that fast. And we mentioned, I think we mentioned last week, if I didn't mention on the air, I did have it in one of my daily emails, that BlackRock cut their fees again on some of their bond funds. And what happens within days? Vanguard fires a fresh salvo in the asset management fee war.
There you go.
They are cutting their fees again. So the next thing you should see happen is Schwab goes, ouch, darn it all. If they're going to maintain fee reduction leadership, they're going to cut their fees some more. They're already dirt cheap. And that's part of the reason we use ETFs.
Sure.
And part of the reason we use Schwab is because, in fact, I had a financial advisor, a major financial advisor on the East Coast, criticize me earlier last year and say, why aren't you using Vanguard instead of Schwab? And I said, because Schwab's cheaper on most of them.
I'm going for the lowest cost provider, see, not Vanguard. So,
so anyway, that was, it was kind of like, really? Yeah, go look. Anyway, Vanguard is apparently feeling some pressure with asset changes. So if you don't want your asset base to shrink from people rotating to another firm, you got to be competitive, and they cut their fees. So that's good for all those index investors and the passive buy and hold, which won't do you any good in a bear market, but it does.
Right.
There's no point in paying excess fees for a fund.
No, we love low fees across the board. So this is really good for everybody, and we love to see the total cost of ownership go down because the price of fees are going down. That's a good thing.
Well, one of the things that's been a strange anomaly is that in order to stay up with a benchmark, and most major ETFs are using the S&P as their benchmark, is they all own the same stuff.
Sure.
So you end up with, you think you're diversified by owning 5 or 6 or 10 different funds, and they're all growth funds. And if you go look at them, they all own the same stuff.
They're substantially
the differences
same.
Are small.
Yep, that's correct.
And now the fees are getting so low that fund managers saying, this doesn't make any sense. So they're introducing actively managed exchange traded funds and raising the fees. And now we use some of those. The issue is, if they're actively managed, are they actually doing something?
Correct.
Instead of closet indexing the S&P or the NASDAQ?
Which happens.
And
yeah, they tell you they're active, but
they're just
copying the index to stay close, and they're not really adding any value. And that's the key. You got to find out if they're going to charge you a higher fee, they better be producing something extra, or it's not worth the trip.
It shouldn't be a closet index portfolio, which means it's just a little bit of work to figure that out. You want to talk to us today? There is still time left, and we got to wake Paul up. I mean, I was talking to him beforehand, and he said, yeah, I mean, he could take a nap. He tries not to. It's company time. But
I
let's
can
see
honestly
we can
say I've never seen him actually asleep. So, yeah, he's
yeah, but you call him you call him before you come into the studio. So it's kind of like an alarm.
I guess that's true. Yeah.
Anyway, there is some good news coming about inflation, at least maybe there is. I mean, part of that assumption is that what the Fed is going to do is actually intervene and cause inflation to unwind about the same time that Omicron looks like it's peaking and it's going to unwind. And we should be reaching the point of saying this is the same kind of adaptation that society made to the flu, which when it first came around killed a lot of people.
Right.
We have to figure out how to live with this, and that doesn't mean everybody walks around with a mask on the rest of their life.
Correct.
And I'm not a doctor, and I'm not telling people what to do, but that seems like it's not going to work for very much longer with all the confusing statements that come out of government and the lack of plan. But the economy will adapt to this. as things, well, the other thing that's happening is we're post-Christmas, which means there's a seasonal slowdown in purchases.
And that's a big deal. Yeah, post-Christmas, post-holidays, now, part of the inflation problem has been massive demand. Well, a lot of that is going away. It really peaks out in February, so it's still coming up. A lot of that demand begins to go away, and that's when we're going to start seeing inflation ease up. It's not going to go away, but it's going to ease up. It's already decelerating. The December number was lower than the October and November number. It was still increasing, but it's increasing less. So we may have seen peak acceleration already of inflation.
That's called the rate of change.
There you go.
It's still going up, but it's just not going up as fast. And so
that's a good thing.
And as demand kind of slows down, then that's a chance for supply chain and delivery to catch up as the work restraints are eased. Companies can call people back to work. I mean, they're not having to tell half their crew, don't show up.
Just stay home, right.
Because we can't comply with federal regulations. Well, the Supreme Court changed that this last week. So companies will make their own decision on that. But they will be able to bring people back to work. They'll do what they believe is reasonable to keep everybody healthy and safe, which is what businesses want to do anyway.
That's correct.
Yep. I mean, the government's assumption that businesses' intent is to kill their workers and to kill their consumers is a stupid assumption.
Makes no sense. No, that's the opposite of what they want. They want happy employees, they want productive employees, and they want lots of people that want to come buy their goods or services. So it's the opposite of that. They want the productivity to be there.
So that's a positive change that's going on, and we should see supply chain stuff begin to moderate. However, there is a fly in the ointment, as the saying goes. In China, they are still running a zero tolerance policy, and they've ended up shutting down some ports. I think it's 6 different ports that they've shut down because somebody tested positive for COVID. When I say somebody, that's singular. One person, and they will shut down an entire berthing area for shipping. That's a zero tolerance policy. And if that doesn't get resolved fairly quickly, then the shipping delay is going to continue for longer. I think that it's going to be at least mid-year of 23, maybe end of 23, before we see a real ease in that because of slow adaptation to figuring out what government regulations and liability issues are. And that means that markets are volatile, and you got to have a plan to deal with it. And the biggest plan is if what the Fed is doing works too rapidly, then the bear comes out of hibernation fairly early. And what are you going to do? Right? What's your plan? Do you actually have a plan? We do. And that's when we explain that plan in our monthly market update webinars, for which you should register if you haven't already. And that is easily done at iriradio.com. iriradio.com. Lower left-hand corner of the website, it says webinar. Couple of clicks, your email, first and last name, and we will we'll have you on tap for a link to join us on February 5th. They are always new. We repeat a few slides from time to time when they're appropriate.
And that usually means that's important stuff if we're going to cover it again.
That's true.
Yeah, we want to bring that up again to make sure everybody sees it. But by and large, they are it's new content, it's new subjects, and it's well worth your time to check in and get those.
We build those webinars the week before we do them.
Yep.
So
yep.
We're looking here saying on our last Saturday show, we say, what are we going to do next week? We've got a webinar
coming up. It's people are signed up. We're going to have to go live, so we need something to say. And but we do like to wait because we want it to be topical. We want to be on top of what's going on, you know, that final week before the webinar. So it's current information. It's what's going on out there right now, things you've heard about, and we address that and let you know what we're doing about it, what we think about what's going on. And then, like I said, there's always plenty of time for your questions during those webinars. It's a great time to get a second opinion on anything as far as investing or the economy goes. And we are up against our last break of the afternoon here. We should go ahead and take a brief pause. If you would like to talk to us, we'd love to talk to you about anything economic or investing based. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
I can see clearly now. The rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way.
Oh, well, we have Greg on the line. Greg, I apologize. I didn't see the note. Glad to have you here. Thanks for hanging in there. You got a question about T-bills, sir. What is your question?
Okay, so gold has been pretty steady doing nothing for, boy, over a decade now. And so I got into some T-bills, and those were doing pretty well maybe a couple of years ago, but now they're not even worth looking at. But do you think those are going to come back?
No.
Not anytime soon. Yeah.
No.
Let me restate that. T-bills are, you're only out 90 days. So with interest rates rising, if you're running T-bills and you're rolling them over every 90 days, you are going to gradually reprice your bills. You buy $100,000, and the end of 3 months, you get $100,000 plus your interest back. So now you go buy another $100,000 worth. You haven't lost any face value, but your interest rate's going to be higher because the Fed has raised rates. At least that's the assumption that's going to go on. Now, whether or not that actually keeps up with inflation is a different issue. Inflation and taxes don't leave you ahead, but your capital base is still your $100,000 and however much interest you roll over. So I just pulled the chart up on the break. And you're right. I mean, they're not doing anything in a zero rate environment, but they are going to look better once interest rates actually start, when the Fed actually starts raising rates. So they'll be okay for a while. And then, with the recession coming, if the Fed actually has to raise interest rates above its 2% target, which I think is highly probable, then the likely outcome is they get a recession. And what do they do in a recession? Let's say they manage to get to 3. That's not much of a base to solve a recession. They're going to reduce rates again. Because cheap money is how businesses reinvent themselves. So there may be let's say a year and a half or two, with rising interest rates where bills are going to start generating better returns. They're still going to be low, but they're going to be better than they have been. And then the recession comes and rates are going to fall apart again because that's what the Fed does.
And that was kind of when I was looking at them the first time, it was just because they were really, really safe investments. They weren't doing anything close to annual inflation rates. But, you know, it was pretty safe to say that I'm putting my money here, and unless the government completely goes away, I should be okay.
You're going to get it back.
So maybe if there is a recession, yeah.
Well, you're still going to get your money back. I mean, the federal government has the ability to just simply borrow more money. And as Mr. Powell said on it was a 60 Minutes program. Within the last few months, he said, we just print money out of thin air. And the interviewer said, you just print money out of, and he says, yeah, that's what we do. Yeah. So,
it's just a ledger entry. We just put a number in, and now there's more money out there. So, and you know,
right.
If you,
all digital.
Yeah, we always tell, you know, people with things like T-bills, the return may be low, but you are going to get the money back. So if you're looking for ultra safe, that's it. Because if if you don't get your money back from the T-bill, there's going to be all kinds of other problems to worry about. things have gone really, really wrong. So chances are good that that you're going to get it back. But, you know, in relation to other investments, that's the real question, I think, is that, you know, with the, you know, equities returning, double digits, do you really want to be messing around with right now, you know, sub 1% interest rates? And like Don said, maybe getting up to 3%, still only half of the inflation rate, might not be worth the trip.
And so your observation about gold are right.
Go ahead.
Well, I said your observations about gold are right. I mean, we were on a different station back in 2011, in the summer of the 2011. We said, it's time to get out of gold. This thing's going to fall apart. And it did. It has recovered with COVID. It actually hit some new highs. But from the 2011 high, gold is still down 9%.
Right. And silver is really bad. It was, I think in 2011, it was somewhere, it was close to $40 an ounce. And now it's, you know, 23.
That hurts. Yeah, that hurts.
So you have to be a very long-term investor for those assets. The inflation assumption, the inflation correlation between those assets is not valid. It's hard to argue that against somebody who believes in owning precious metals in underneath their bed or in a safe in the garage or something. But that's reality. They're not correlated. They show up. Well, that's where the problem happened in the 70s when Nixon took us off the gold standard. All of a sudden, demand had been repressed for, 40 years?
Long time, yeah.
and now, so everybody starts buying gold, and we had inflation, and so they assume the two were hooked at the hip, and they're not.
Right.
And they haven't been since. I mean, periodically, they look like they're going to be, and that's where the problem is now. Gold investors are thinking inflation's going to make this thing happen, and it isn't happening. What inflation is doing is causing the price of energy to rise. So buying carbon fuels is a lot more profitable than buying gold to deal with the inflation impact in the economy.
Yeah, so. I completely agree. Yeah. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Have a great day.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for the call.
We like the way you think, sir.
You're on the right track.
Thank you.
We're glad to have you out there. Thanks. Thank you very much. Thanks for hanging on. Anyway, that leaves an open phone line here for another 5 minutes or so. And the number is 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. Promise it will not leave you on hold as long as we did, Paul.
I will
pay more attention to the screen.
I'm with you. Again, our fearless board op, Paul, saved us there. Yeah, so.
Yeah, we did. Well, we've kind of covered a myriad of subjects, but one of the things has been the irrational pricing of some of these assets. And I mentioned a minute ago the issue that Zoom, which is a relatively young company, its market cap crossed that of ExxonMobil, which goes all the way back to 1870. So when Zoom went public in 19, Exxon was 21 times its size. And then, for one brief flickering moment during the pandemic, Zoom took it over. It was a larger company. And now Exxon is 5.5 times larger than Zoom. Order has been restored
as
in the galaxy.
As it should be, that's right.
So we call this multiple compression. That the sales multiple or the earnings multiple has been brought back down to a more normal range where fundamentals are beginning to take play in the market. And that is a risk for the growth segment and the tech segment in the market. We really need to pay attention this quarter to the rate of change in earnings growth from these last couple of quarters. We expect earnings reports are going to be positive. And it was, I think Friday was JP Morgan or Citi, one of the two. And they had good earnings, but they weren't good enough. So the stock price was down.
There you go.
All right.
Good news and bad news, yeah.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you take a look at this stuff and say, this just doesn't make any sense, does it?
And a lot of times it doesn't, which is why our biggest filter, our primary filter is price. We look at what the prices say, and it doesn't matter what the price to earnings ratio is. It doesn't matter, you know, if they hit or miss their earnings. It doesn't matter. What's the price of the security? If people are buying it, it doesn't matter what the rest of the news is. If people aren't buying it, it doesn't matter how good the rest of the news is. It doesn't matter unless it translates into a positive change in the price, and that's one of our primary data points.
So you turn around and take a look at a company that just a couple of years ago, December of 19, was the revenue, its sales, was $446 million. And today, it's $4 billion.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's $4 billion. But the stock has fallen 81%. Now. What's with that?
Yeah, maybe a lot of that selling is a little overdone. Maybe it's, you know, the lemmings are following each other over the cliff, because that's clearly a company that has expanded its user base, increased its revenue. Everything's looking good, and yet it's just in shambles stock price wise. And that's one of those that you can watch. But, you know, our advice is don't buy it on the way down. You know, you have to wait for that thing to turn, because you never know how far down is. 80% means it's still got 20% it can drop. So you got to be careful there.
Yeah, so the company I was referring to is Peloton. I mean, with the pandemic, sales went through the roof. And now that people can go back to the gym, and at least to some extent, and who wants to spend thousands of dollars to put another piece of equipment where you work out by yourself? Well, that, you know, you got a TV screen. Anyway, so their problem is, how do we generate revenue on an ongoing basis? One of the ways you deal with that is you figure out what your process is. We explain that in our webinars every month. It comes up on February 5th. If you have not registered, it's easy to do so at irradio.com. That's irradio.com. If you're not getting our Week in Review weekly newsletter, then send us an email, help@irradio.com. Put your first and last name in the body of the email. Put Week in Review in the subject line, and we will add you to the list. If you don't like it, it's a one-click unsubscribe. You never hear from us again, but very, very few do. You want to talk to us through the week? We have a magic phone number, 800-317-9119, and we will actually talk to you. We're out of time. God bless you, your family, and the United States of America. Lord willing, we'll be back next week.